The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
So today we'll be talking to the Prisons Association President, Mr. Gerard Gordon. Mr. Gerard Gordon, and of course we'll be talking about the prisons boss. Of course, that was just, he just retired. So good afternoon to you, sir. Let me see what mic we on here, yeah?
Hi, good afternoon, base.
Nice, good afternoon, man. How are you today, sir?
I good.
So you're head of the Prisons Association of Trinidad and Tobago. What was the prison sports where you went to?
Nah.
Oh, you didn't go?
No.
Too busy for that?
I'm busy.
All right, okay. Prison sports. Bring on to the prison sports nonetheless. So you're the main man of the prisons, Mr. What was his name again?
Mr. Dioprasad
Ramuta. Yes, Dioprasad. Yes, Mr. Ramuta. Mm-hmm. Good job. I was listening to him about an interview on another station.
Yes.
He was well loved by not only his comrades and stuff, but by prisoners as well too. Prisoners had a lot of respect for him. One of the things, especially female prisoners, said he was the one who suggests that they could wear a little makeup and thing, make them look a little pretty, feel a little better. A lot of fellas talk about how he gave them an ear and listened to them, and he changed a lot of things in the prison, right? But I don't know if you have been the head of the prison association, the president of the prison association. How would you feel about him and his work and his tenure and what he has done?
You know, whenever you ask these sort of questions,
mm-hmm.
and I know you could only speak to what you would have heard,
mm-hmm.
It could be quite easy to go down a particular road.
Mm-hmm.
How do they say a bacchanal road? But I want to go down a bacchanal road.
The
thing is, Mr. Ramuta would have done, I guess, what he thought he should have done.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the decisions, I mean, if we just take a cursory glance at over the last 2 years, you know, we had a number of matters that we would have brought before the courts that went counter to some of the decisions that he would have made. We did win all of those matters in the courts. You know, we preferred at this present point in time, I think it's just probably 1 or 2 days he still has here at the head of the organization. But as the Prison Officers Association, you know, we are looking forward, moving forward. There's a lot of work to be done, and so we are standing ready to work with the new commissioner of prisons and his team to address some of the long-standing issues and challenges that the Trinidad and Tobago Prison Service continue to face, and certainly our members continue to face.
So what are some of the issues you had with Mr. Ramuta, with his leadership and some of the things in the prisons on the whole?
It's difficult. I think people do what they think they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he listened enough.
Mm-hmm.
His style was one that often, more times than was necessary, you know, it really led into what we believe as unnecessary conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, as the Prison Officers Association, our main duty is looking after the well-being of our membership,
mm-hmm.
Who generally is officers. And there were a lot of unnecessary back and forth sometimes, things that could have been addressed through some open and honest dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But that's unfortunately,
with the prison's officers themselves.
Yes.
But I mean, in a job like that, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place, because you had to make sure the prisoners, you know, are decent, little happy. Some people believe prisoners shouldn't be happy. Prisoners in prison, the thing. But, you know, there's, you know, the humans at the end of the day, and we need to have more restorative kind of things happening.
And that, you know, as you touch on that, mm-hmm. Some weeks ago, more than a few weeks ago, I would have made a call for the closure of Port of Spain prison.
Right, okay.
And of course, that speaks directly to that issue that you speak of.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to do these programs?
Mm-hmm.
In what sort of environment? And one would understand that the type of environment that you engage or that you operate in certainly plays a huge role in one, how effective you are able to be, and certainly how effective the programs that you want to be able to do. You know, exactly how many people could you engage effectively operated in a facility that is over 200 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much retrofitting that could be done and can be done. And certainly we at the Prison Officers Association recognize that the conditions under which of prisoners exist is the same conditions under which officers are expected to work and function. And, you know, we are looking forward to improving those conditions for the benefit of everyone involved so that we can meet our mandate as we should.
All right. So what are some of the things that the prison officers want? Because, I mean, a lot of people... And yes, and I mean, I know a prison officer job is not easy. You have to deal with some hardened criminals that your life is against the line. I don't know if what you're fighting for is for prison officers to get their firearms. And I think what are some of the conditions, what the conditions within the prisons. But what are some of the things, because we have a lot of instances where we have prison officers who carry in, you know, things mm-hmm. For prisoners, you know, whether it be...
And that is a very small percentage mm-hmm. of what happens.
But are they being caught? I mean, we have scanners.
Yeah, well, I always say that I think we are the only division, really,
mm-hmm.
in the Ministry of National Security that actively
mm-hmm.
Seeks to get rid of rogue elements.
Mm-hmm.
Just by the way the place is set up, you know, searching is conducted every day. And we... actively would want to have those officers who would want to run afoul to be able to get them out. Some of the things that we are actively engaged in, we would have written to the OSH Board of Trinidad and Tobago to commence a number of inspections of all prison facilities, because obviously, you know, we the public does know, and I think you do too, that we would have signed a number of international conventions that speak to the working conditions for everyone. They are on their course of re-inspections now, and I know arising out of that, they would have been sending those reports to the permanent secretary in the Ministry of National Security. There is a lot of money that needs to be released to correct the shortcomings that have been identified. That is one issue. When we look at the whole issue of safety, safety for us is not only about procuring a firearm. You talk about housing,
mm-hmm.
the ability to operate and live in a space where one could feel comfortable.
Right.
And certainly we know the challenges with that living on a small twin island republic such as our own.
Mm-hmm.
But these are some of the items that we continue to engage in. And then we have basic things that we have stab-proof vests, bulletproof vests, staves. Even we have been looking at non-lethals. So pepper spray, the implementation of those sort of things, so that we could then engage, if it is necessary, with proper and more modern tools
mm-hmm.
to be able to do our job.
All right, definitely. Of course, we're talking to the head of the Prisons Officers Association, Trinidad Tobago. Any prisons officers they out there, feel free to call us up at 627-3223. I don't know if that line is working, but if not, do try 625-2257. You could also WhatsApp us at 306-1065. Some people seem to think, well, in the prison, I mean, even though we have Raymond, I don't know, the Frederick Street, mm-hmm. not really conducive to even somebody who you wouldn't put a dog inside of there, boy.
Yes.
Right? It still has some men in the prison. They're living nice. They get anywhere where they want. You see them in gold chain. You see them in brands.
Gold chain.
Thing. No, you see the men that be sending out video and thing. Men that be sending out videos.
Yeah.
They're living the lap of logs. Some of them, like, is luxury in that prison, calling shots and all kind of thing from the inside.
Yes, yes.
Right? What say you about that?
The thing about it is that if you look at any correctional institution anywhere in the world, there is a constant challenge in dealing with unauthorized.
But that is small prison, that is not...
No, but you see, whether small or large, the technology is the same.
Mm.
The jammers, all these technologies is nothing. We are not the inventors of cell phone jammers.
Mm-hmm.
So we employ technology that is applied elsewhere.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, our infrastructure sometimes doesn't allow.
Mm-hmm.
There are some challenges and limitations with its usage based on where you are located.
Mm.
So there are challenges involved, and these are challenges that we constantly have to be looking at, reassessing what we're doing, how are we doing it, how could we become more effective.
Mm.
But it is a never-ending engagement in trying to address those issues and challenges.
All right. You know, we have the gang situation going on in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
When somebody, if it's from a gang or somebody found guilty of any crime, goes into prison, what is really done, anything done in there to make sure they come out not wanting to do that? Because it seems like when you go in prison, there's a pips, you get street cred. But I was inside by, I make out 2 years, I make out 2 months by Saturday, no, yeah, by come out by.
You know, I want to make the definition about we have different categories, let me put it that way, of our charges. So we have people who are remanded.
Mm-hmm.
Remanded people are innocent until proven guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding, we operate in a space where we believe when the police lock you up, you're guilty. Mm-hmm. If the police hold you, we try to operate in a manner as if you are guilty already, but that is the law doesn't allow for that.
Mm-hmm.
And currently, our remanded population outstrips our convicted populations, people who have gone to the court, had their matter heard, and are now serving a sentence.
Mm.
You're talking possibly about two-thirds, or a little more than two-thirds of the entire prison population being remanded.
Mm.
So all of these people could go home at any point in time if they are able to access bail. If their matter does go before the judge or the magistrate and they are found not guilty, and then even on a lesser count, we have even fewer people who are being found guilty at the courts and then making that transition onto being a convicted inmate. And the treatment of these two classes of people is very different. Even the mentality, the psychology of the incarcerated individual,
mm-hmm.
somebody who is uncertain.
Yeah.
Of what is going to happen to them. I work at Port of Spain prison. We have people who are remanded 14, 15 years.
Mm.
So you are innocent until proven guilty, and this is the length of time that the state is taking to prove their case.
All right, so what we do, and we are chatting with Mr. Gordon of the Prisons Association.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
All right, so we're continuing with our interview here with Mr. Gordon, Prisons Officers Association, right, of Trinidad and Tobago. And we're talking about, well, basically, most of the issues with the prisons officers. Of course, we have a retired Mr. Ramuta. But you would have dealt with Mr. Ramuta from time to time. I mean, like you say, was he an easier guy to deal with? You said there were conflicts, but conflicts really about what, really?
No, the thing, I guess he had his ideas and belief as it relates to how certain things should be done.
Yeah, but things like what? Like what would prison officers and him get away with?
I think it's what he...
A difference of opinion.
He always spoke about this whole issue of discipline. One of the matters you would see that we would have won in the court, two officers would have taken him to court for this issue of facial hair.
Oh, the facial hair, okay.
Yeah, and that was one that he could not, the state could not have won those matters because it doesn't exist in our regulations, it doesn't exist anywhere in the Public Service Commission regs, nor the Prison Service Act, nor in the code of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
What we have is general orders. These general orders come out from time to time, out from the office of the Commissioner of Prisons.
Mm-hmm.
But what is key is that those general orders must be a derivative of some superior piece of legislation or act or law. It is not about your how you feel about something. It has to be something to operationalize a part of the act or whatnot.
Mm. But in terms of his discipline with the look, I remember with the gentleman was a Muslim, right?
Yes.
And yeah, what was the other one?
Other guy, he would have been doing all that was required via those same general orders that were illegal.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been going to the doctor. He had an issue with shaving. He had, I forget the medical term used for the for those razor bumps and the scarring and whatnot that occurs.
Right.
And I think it's since like 2015, he would have been availing himself of this process. And then we reached this point, and then they are denying him the generally saying that they do accept his exemption from shaving. And that matter was taken to court, and of course the attorneys would have brought their expert witness. I think some dermatologists they would have brought to the fore, and of course that matter too was successful. So there is no there is nothing within the act that speaks to a prison officer having to shave or be clean shaven. It's not supported by that.
But, in terms of discipline, I mean, a prison officer, you can't go to work looking anyhow. I mean,
of course not.
I can't have my beard looking like, you know.
No, of course not. Like, I mean, when we talk about how you carry yourself and how you present yourself, and even that is a big issue because we have not even gotten uniforms. The last time the prison service got uniforms was in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So we have batches who pass out and they have never received their uniform.
Okay.
So if we're talking about discipline and you want people to pay in a particular way, you know, this also forms part of that whole construct.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have one without the other. And certainly in making certain decisions, it cannot be viewed. We have things like the Equal Opportunities Commission.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be viewed as you want to disadvantage a particular group, especially if we're talking about religion. You know, we had to be careful when we dealing with these particular issues.
Right, definitely. In terms of the housing, I mean, for a prison officer to be living in certain areas, especially certain hotspot areas where it had these numbers, you know, the 60, 70, 89 thing, and a man is a prison officer, how does one get over that for a prison officer to be living in certain areas? You have to be very careful, especially with your family and things. You know?
Well, the thing about it is that the we have officers who, up to this point, they continue to live. They grew up, they bami house, and they grew up in those areas. They continue to, a number of them continue to live there. And it's not because they don't want to move.
Mm.
But I just always say prison officers operate in a kind of weird kind of place when it comes to home ownership based on your age and the salary that we receive.
Mm.
So we make too much to get some of the grants, like the housing grants, where they will help you build and that sort of thing.
Mm.
Because we make over the 7,000, I think is the limit on that.
Mm.
But then we make too little, because if you have to qualify for a home, let's say 1.8 million, you're looking at joint or single somewhere around $25,000 a month.
Right.
Prison officers don't make that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're talking about your security concerns, I'm sure you know that basically anyway you look, if you're looking for a secure home, so you're looking at any one of the gated communities that's spotted
money.
All over the, that is money.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly we can't afford that also.
Mm.
So we have been engaging with the Ministry of Housing and our own ministry.
Mm.
They would have recommenced what we call the Joint Protective Services Housing Committee meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And we are hopeful that will bear some fruit and some relief for our members. But we continue to look for opportunities that we could share with our members to try to get them into their own homes, and not just anywhere, but certainly somewhere where security is number one.
All right, so you're looking for like special allocation if a new housing scheme going up, with some special allocation for protective services, make sure prisons officers in that.
Correct.
Right. In terms of when the budget comes, the Ministry of National Security, which you all fall under, gets a big chunk of the budget. Is there any things like certain equipment and things that are needed for prison officers?
One of the things, one of the challenges we face in the prison service is that, you know, oftentimes they hear this, they say, why Oledo just do this or why Oledo just do that? The prison service does not have an accounting officer as its head. So, for example, the police service, the police commissioner, could spend and justify.
Okay.
We are allocated via the budget in tranches called votes or in areas called votes. So you'll have a vote for probably maintenance and repair of this or purchasing new vehicles or salaries or food or whatnot. And then we have to ask for that money to be utilized at certain points.
Okay.
Because we cannot just spend the money. The money is not really there for us. And what we see over the last few years especially is that we have the oldest fleet of vehicles. I was so happy for the police again with the last passing out of police officers, the minister speaking that 50 new vehicles have once again been procured for the Trinidad Tobago Police Service.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a PEG. To me, like, every time a new series come out, I see a new police vehicles on the road, and I am totally against that.
And but it's a completely different story in the prison service. Our fleet is 15 years old.
Yeah, somebody, I see some old green van with all the
boys. Old van. And the question, it begs, you know, you know, where really is the focus? And is it, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It seems that we're prepared to pay amalgamated X amount, whatever it may be, because they assist, because our fleet is old. So we don't have the amount of vehicles, so they would assist. We carry people to clinic, or sometimes they have to move or whatnot. But the money that they were utilizing there could be better placed in acquiring new vehicles. We have drivers, we have officers who are outfitted to do these sort of things, and we could do it ourselves, and it would be a big savings on the state.
So do you feel the prison officers are slighted in Trinidad and Tobago, seeing that you all are, like, I mean, the first responders, the first, you know, the main connection to the prisoners, the prison population?
I think we are treated the way we are treated because it's like guilty by association. So there is this, probably people see it difficult to separate the inmates from the officers. And you know, with this whole crime situation that we're going through, the public is traumatized by crime. That is a fact. So when you have to come now and you say, well, you want to spend money on the jail, they don't want to hear, well, it's new vehicles. They don't want to hear, well, it's bulletproof vests and it's stab-proof vests for the staff. And it's this. As far as they're concerned, listen, it's jail. Leave the just so, let it suffer, let them suffer. And so I think we have to really, and even through these interviews and these interactions, you know, dispel some of the misinformation and myth surrounding prison. And one of the things I'm hoping that we're able to do in the future is let's open up the prison. We're seeing what police doing every day. You don't have to guess what a police, you have the police station is there. You're seeing the vehicles moving up and down. They could call, you get a response, 999, whatever it may be. But I think that the prison needs to be more open for access by the public so that people could see for themselves, you know, what is happening.
Like, I'm saying that with young people, trouble people, those bullies in school and who fighting in school, could they get a field trip in the prison to see what prison life is like?
Well, with children, maybe, you know, I think we still run a program at the youth training center.
Now you want them going maximum and see what it is.
Yeah.
They need to see it raw, real.
But maybe you could advance a program like that.
That's why I want for them white to go in maximum security.
Let
them
come and see UTC, what
YTC,
it is.
No, I don't know, YTC, man.
Let
that
it see big
soft
jail.
They want to see big jail. They want to do big thing. See big jail. That is what they need. We're taking some calls, man. 625-2257. Hello, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Mr. Bass.
Yes, sir.
And to your guest from the prison services.
Good day.
Princess Tong.
Yeah, Princess Tong. Question for the gentleman.
Yes, Mr. Prison Officer, I really emphasize with you. I mean, I really feel sorry to hear your plight and the plight of the other officers. I mean, being aware of the kind of work you all do and the service you provide with all the risks and so on. To hear that you're not even getting uniforms on time. I mean, this I don't. This is an embarrassing thing.
Yes, it is.
I mean, we have an everyday look now. We have a big conference going on by the Hyatt and all kind of this and that, as I was saying in a previous program. But you can't provide the prison services with uniform. That is tantamount, like a fella, you know, you have on a big ID band for $10,000. Mm-hmm. But you hungry?
Mm-hmm.
That is making no economics, no social sense to me.
No.
That is fooling people, I mean, to the core. But, Mr. Officer, I want to get your thoughts on something. Recently here we heard on the news the Maruga Composite School.
Yes.
Which is about 10 minutes away, I think, on average here, from the beach itself. So I want people to have a picture here. And they had an altercation with somebody from the village who went to the parlor and he was beaten up. I think he's still in hospital and all of that.
Yes.
Now, these students, these are 15-year-old or six, at most 16, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they imagine they hop a taxi from Maruga, drop in Princess Tongue, take a next taxi and go down by the hospital and continue to beat the guy. Mother pushed her down, which she has to get medical attention to. She was pregnant.
Yes, I saw that.
Now, tell me, Mr. Officer, with your experience with YTC and prisoners, I mean, these are 15-year-olds, 16. What kind of mind they have? What they have in their brain?
You know,
it's not like a spur of the moment. You do what you have to do.
Premeditated.
Beat the guy and then turn around and jump in a taxi and go all the way to probably the next hour.
Yeah.
So it's not that they didn't have time to think and say, oh, God, why are we making a mistake here?
Correct.
They had time to think. Travel, go
down,
and
what is your question, Princess? You want somewhere to put them? You want to have, what you want, a boot camp?
I would like to hear the officer. I mean, he has been exposed to some of these young guys. Of course, we had to get. I find it's time we playing games with these criminals.
All right, man. Yeah, so like I was saying, carry them in maximum and let them see me like. But boot camps and these kind of things, like you see, we see them on TV and so on and so on. Why can't you say open up the prison? Open up the prisons to some of these children see that prison life is not no bed of roses.
Yeah, I think we really need to have a more
a shock factor approach.
Yeah, had to be more impactful as it relates, because I am not even saying parent, because some of these children, the parents trying, you know, parents doing the best and trying the best that they can, and then you have to hear this horror story of what is happening there. And the thing about it is that it's almost as if there is no respect for life and the humanity of thinking about it. That you will push down and I think pregnant woman all in her head. I think they struck her all in her head. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I think as a society, it really has to be a societal shift and get everybody on board. Certainly, we could be the center where we have certain things happening, but we certainly need societal support to have that sort of thing happen. And let me move forward and try to get people back. Up to today, I was talking about that, how impatient everybody seems, how people angry for no reason. And you keep asking yourself, what is really going on with people? And why is they thinking and feeling the way that they should? And we're seeing it. I don't know. I don't know what is happening with society as it is today.
A different time, different time. Now, how can we make our prisons better? There are a lot of developed countries, when you look at the prison, somebody could go in the prison and study, come out with a PhD and all, you know. How can we make some of our prisons better?
The easy answer for that is that we need to move out of the 1900s as it relates to prison. We're still operating on the 1838 Act.
Yeah.
We have no new rules. 1838. We in 2024. Yeah. Of course, there would have been some amendments to that.
Mm.
But generally, how we operate, what manages how we operate, what speaks to what we do and how we do it is 200 plus years old. And I think that is where we have to start, is by really doing some serious introspection. Yes, recognize where we were, but we really need to have a clear vision of where we want to be. What do we expect of a modern correctional institution in Trinidad and Tobago in this time, not only to deal with the crimes, but deal with those offenders, but how are we best preparing them to come back out into society, and how well are we partnering with society to be able to accept them when they go back out from the prison?
Definitely. And in terms of what do you want from the new incoming head of the prisons? What would you like to see with the new incoming head of the prisons?
Well, the thing about it is that there's so much to do and so little time. Mm. What I would say is that, you know, we just spoke about vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I am hopeful that he will sit with his team, that body of management, and really look forward. Where do we see the prison in the next 10 years?
Mm.
And then we apply, we kind of like reverse engineer. So we know where we want to be. What are those things that we need to do to get us there? And of course, a key component in any success of any plan moving forward for betterment and improvement in the prison service must include the staff, the hard-working men and women of the Trinidad and Tobago prison service. So they must be able to be part of that process. And I remain hopeful. I'm starting at 100,
mm-hmm.
and looking forward to working with the new commissioner and his team to really bring about some of the changes that we so desperately need.
And a couple of things before we go. Then one more. But the other day when they had the employment opportunity for people to join the prison service, whether it was around the corner, it was from by Aruka to Samoa. The line was long, right? What it is join. Young men and young women.
They just want to work.
Hmm.
They think it's just a work. When you come in, then that is when you realize this is not just a work.
Hmm.
This is a vocation. This is something that will take away your youth from you. I myself, this year is my 26th year there. Some of my batchmates have already retired.
Right.
The job is one where it is people-centered. It's a people-centric. We don't deal with boxes. It's human beings you're dealing with every day. And if you are one who is a bit shy or a bit not willing to make the human condition a study, you're going to have a lot of problems in that service, because every day you're dealing with human beings, both your co-workers and the inmates.
Can a prison officer could change our inmate life? Our prison officers allowed to talk to inmates, you know what I mean?
Yeah, kind of certainly. And we have seen that happen. We have a number of inmates over the years who would have availed themselves of a lot of the programs. One of the biggest challenges we have, besides the infrastructure and how it limits us, is the fact that society is not really willing to accept the ex-inmate. One of the most difficult things is that we do a lot of work. We have a very hard-working programs department, so you may have someone who probably couldn't even read, but now they could read, or somebody who didn't finish school, do their CXE, whatever it may be. They have all kind of courses, so they do plumbing, they do electrical.
They could do that in there.
Whatever it is. And then you come out and you can't get a job. Why?
But there should be some system
because
in place.
Correct. But our jurisdiction, we don't have aftercare or that transition period to sort of buffer that return back to society. But I think that is one of the biggest challenges that we face in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, man. I remember when it had the Maximum Rise, the prison radio.
Yeah, they're still around.
They're still around. Yeah, I was a teacher when it had just started.
Right.
But I had to do some training and thing. So I was there and I was training some people and thing. But then after a little while, I asked, where the prisoners? I didn't know it was prisoners all the time I was talking to. So I would say, but is he prisoners right
is
here?
Prisoners right
this here? One here, and kill this one here, and maximum this one here thing. And I say, what them is prisoners, boy?
Yeah.
And they do us normal, you know?
Yeah.
Normal people.
It's human beings.
Human
beings. And you see, once we able to get past, and that is why it's so important that the public feels that justice is being done.
Mm.
You see, in the absence of justice being seen to be done, people feeling that, hey, people not getting away with stuff, then I think some of the feelings, some of the apprehension, some of the anxiety surrounding prison and what we do will move away. But until we really start to address the whole issue of delivering justice to the public of Trinidad and Tobago, it's going to be an uphill battle.
But as you mentioned, justice, the judiciary system has a lot of work to do too, because a man can be sitting down in the waiting for a case 5, 10, 15 years, and your case and call like nonsense. Look how quick they deal with this Christmas list.
What do you think? Well, I am saying don't say quick, you know.
Huh?
Don't say quick.
Wait, faster than quick. But they gotta make up a new word for how to deal with that.
Listen, there are things, you know, when we discuss the judiciary, it seems like everybody wants to have a kind of hands-off approach.
Mm.
You know, don't talk about the judiciary and this separation of powers and whatnot. But the fact of the matter is that I ask myself, is this what we think is good enough for us as a people?
Mm.
And you know, they say who feels it knows it.
Yeah.
So we out here, we good, you home, you ain't doing no crime, the police never arrest you, you never find yourself on that side.
Until
you reach there, and then you realize, wait, adjournment for some of these people in the High Court is a year plus, you know.
Mm.
It have people waiting for a date for them after 7 years.
Just a date.
You waited 7 years.
In the meantime, the lawyer going in and out of court, and making money, making his business.
It's a system that we had a look at. Man. We have to see if it's really serving us as a people. And the question we really have to ask, is this what we want as the people of Trinidad and Tobago? Is this good enough for us? Is what we have to ask. And I am saying, without even asking it, I'm saying it's not good enough.
Yeah. Well, what about the Minister of National Security? Does he give you all an ear? Or he just...
He's one who is not very pleased with the Prison Officers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't be. And I've said it time and time again. We have said it. He is not a good Minister of National Security.
Wow.
In our... If we given him a scorecard, he get an F. Every time. I don't know if they have minus F.
Yeah.
But he gets an F every time.
Hmm.
And it is burdensome having to be able to see him not function.
But in what way and why? Because I mean he said what his role is just like a middleman. He later on take the things to Parliament, but what do you want him to do?
If we could accept that if we didn't have something different at a point in time, and you know I know some of the that whole political game, people just get real antsy.
Well, yeah,
I'm not dealing with the politics of it.
Yeah.
I just speak in facts.
Yeah, the ketchup on mustard.
But when Stuart Young was there, and it was direct. It had things that he did for us.
More hands-on.
Yeah, he was more hands-on. You call him, you say, Minister, so, X, and this is the case. All right, send me a note. He send me a note. And he goes about personally looking to see how best. Those star-proof vests, the first set of star-proof vests the prison ever got was under Minister Young.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about performance, it is nothing... It's not personal, you know, but when you know it have something better, you were in a better space.
Yeah,
and if we really want to get better, maybe we need to go back to where we were under the Ministry of Justice. Because while we were under the Ministry of Justice, prison was treated with and dealt with in a manner that has never happened in the history of Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm.
So whereas the minister is concerned...
Hmm.
It's neither
F minus
F.
Oh gosh, boy. Mr. Gerald Gordon, I wish you all the best. I do wish the best for prison officers. It's not an easy job, and I really wish we could really do something with our prison. But before people get in there, I mean, even while they're in there, things could happen. But consider what I'm telling you, boy, from primary school.
Yeah.
Let them go in and see what their life is like. Some of them might see their father in there, or their uncle or people they know.
Correct.
But they really had to do something to open up these youth eyes. It ain't going nice.
No, it ain't going good at all. All
right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.